Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday, September 29th. And currently we've got 46 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, welcome back to Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Thank you. Yeah, glad to be back. Came back to some active weather moving into the Beehive State. We had some showers overnight. We have more showers and thunderstorms, especially this afternoon and evening for Park City, as a cold front's going to be working its way through. So nice drop in temperatures, as you can imagine, into Friday with that cold front coming in. About 72 for the high today. Southwest flow will be in place. We'll see some breezy winds. Again, a good chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Could even see some isolated severe thunderstorms. We are all of northern Utah essentially under a risk or a marginal risk for severe storms. So could see some hail, of course, associated with those thunderstorms that do form, and some stronger wind gusts. Showers will continue into the overnight hours of Friday. Could see some lingering moisture Friday for folks, again, east of I-15. So, of course, that's the Wasatch Back Park City area. Temperatures will just be 62 on Friday afternoon versus 72 today. Overnight lows in the mid-40s. Slight chance of storms even lingering into Saturday as we get into the weekend. Highs will be in the low 60s. Overnight lows into Saturday morning just in the upper 30s. So a chilly start to the weekend with those overnight lows. Highs will stay in the 60s on Sunday. I think most of the moisture is going to stay north and east of us, but there will be some lingering chances of isolated storms Sunday with drier conditions into next week. So again, today being the most active into Friday, a threat of isolated storms lingering into the weekend. By Monday, sunny skies, 66 degrees. Tuesday should be about 67. And on Wednesday, more sunshine with a high of 68. So perfect fall weather to kick off next week. Leslie?
Okay. Hey, thanks, Nate. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Doug Clyde. Later on, Planned Parenthood of Utah Vice President of Outreach Annabelle Scheinberg telling us about an event that's happening Sunday to support Planned Parenthood at the Jago Gallery. And finally, Jeff Fishman. He's a member of the Park City Professional Artists Association. He'll have details about tomorrow's monthly gallery stroll. Taking a look at local news now, dozens of Park City residents evacuated from the city yesterday morning due to an earthquake. But the whole thing was just a trial run. KPCW's Park Malatesta reports.
What would residents do if a major catastrophe hit Summit County? And how would local government help keep people safe and minimize danger and destruction? Those questions occupy emergency services professionals and those who run cities and counties. And just as practice improves performance in many aspects of life, they're hoping Wednesday's emergency evacuation drill helped with preparing for future unknowns. The practice evacuation was originally scheduled for last year, but that was delayed when the Parley's Canyon fire forced the evacuation of thousands of residents in Pinebrook and Summit Park. Wednesday's exercise involved a made-up natural disaster. A large earthquake in the Salt Lake Valley rattled structures, cut off water supply, and shut down interstates. Mike McComb, the city's emergency manager, added more detail to the mock scenario.
In conjunction with that, the earthquake caused a semi carrying flammable liquids to crash on I-80 near Summit Park. And the resulting explosion has caused a large wildfire in the Summit Park area.
Lower Deer Valley was designated the intermediate safety zone where everyone participating met. Park City Police Department Public Information Officer Jay Randall said that in a real wildfire, that location would not be used. He said the department focuses on being able to set up incident command centers anywhere that works. The goal then became to transport everyone to the designated evacuation site, which in this case was the Richardson Flat Park and Ride. More mock trouble ensued. In a set involving actors and fake blood, six vehicles got in a crash on the way to the evacuation site on Bonanza Drive. Several people were injured and one person required air med. Once again, this is all fake. After successfully getting to the evacuation site, the city held a mock press conference where officials briefed the media. City Councilmember Jeremy Rubel spoke at the podium.
Really proud of our response and all the folks teaming together here across not only Park City Municipal, but surrounding areas and jurisdictions. And just folks know out there, we're here for you. Come out to the evacuation sites and we'll be able to take care of everyone. And the most important thing is staying safe right now.
McComb said the importance of the exercise was being highlighted across the country as Florida is dealing with evacuation orders given the oncoming impact of Hurricane Ian. He said Wednesday's event was a success.
Overall, I think that stakeholders and participants were largely very positive in terms of seeing it in action. Overall, I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Visit BeReadyParkCity.org to learn about how to prepare for emergencies and sign up for local alerts. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, as well as attending a joint meeting with the Park City Council earlier this week. On the phone with a recap of both, I have Council Member Doug Clyde. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Leslie.
First off, you had told me earlier this week that you would be resigning from your council seat. Any updates there?
No, everything is still the same. We're just, as I mentioned at the time, it's just trying to give, among other people, the party a heads up that I'm leaving. They're going to have to take some action to find my replacement. And so hopefully they're beginning to work on that.
Yeah. And you had said that really, you were waiting for some kind of vote on the council, something to do with, water protection. Why wait for one vote, though? Wouldn't it pass without your vote?
It might or it might not. It could get complicated. Somebody could raise some questions. These are hugely complicated issues, and been working on them literally for a decade or more. So it could be a problem. I'm not anticipating it. I think the legislation is fairly clear, but we'll see. We gotta wait for it to get out of Planning Commission.
Yeah, Administrative Assistant Annette Singleton sends out a agenda preview. Have you seen the agenda item that you are looking for? Yeah.
I haven't. I'm just aware that apparently it's on, but I haven't. I haven't followed it closely. As soon as it gets through Planning Commission, then I'll sort of test the wind to see where we're at. But,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Has anybody reached out to you asking you about the position and their interest?
No. Since I've announced, no. Nobody's reached out to me, no.
All right. Let's move to the joint meeting with Park City Council on Tuesday. You spent about 90 minutes, I believe, discussing and hearing the presentation on sustainable tourism. Everybody there happy with what was presented?
Oh, I think so. It is it's a big effort on our community's part, not only on the chamber, not only as a marketing effort, but it is essentially live what you say, do what you say sort of scenario. We need to be an active participant in being a good steward of the environment, especially if we are going to maintain our desirability as a destination resort.
Yeah. How do you think tourism in Summit County changes, if at all, having this plan?
Well, I think it's it's like any other long range marketing effort. We've just got to vector our activities to be in line with our constituents. I don't think that tourism changes much per se. I think we will see a change in tourism over the years as we're dealing with global warming or even the change that we're seeing with current new ticket policies. So there'll be changes, but I don't think it actually changes our activity. I think it's just a matter of positioning us in the marketplace.
All right. Also discussed were park and ride lots. There, of course, is that 465 spot park and ride at Quinns Junction that was basically turned down after members of the Summit County Council felt that it would create a worse traffic situation. You did hear from your Public Works Department, apparently, that said that there are plans to move that old Highway 40 intersection east a couple of hundred feet. That should make a difference. So given that, I mean, will you change your mind about whether or not that lot goes forward?
I wouldn't. I doubt, and I don't think that anybody, and you'll have to excuse me, I left a few minutes early, but my understanding is that nobody ended up supporting that per se. It's a Band-Aid solution and not a very good one, a leaky Band-Aid. Because there are just some geometry problems with the intersection you just can't get away from, and that is that it is going to be very difficult to make a left turn to get into that lot, and that's what most of the traffic will be attempting to do. So the meeting resulted in an acknowledgement on both parties that we just needed to work at a long-term common solution out there.
Right. But for the thousands of people who will be moving into Silver Creek Village, it will be a right-hand turn. What do you tell them? I mean, I understand that it's a problem perhaps coming from other areas of the county or Wasatch County.
Right.
We've got Highland Estates, we've got Silver Creek Village, we've got Silver Creek, all that would come down the frontage road.
Some of it could, and some of it would, but our local traffic is not our problem. Our problem is, a result of inflow of, major portions of traffic, from the valley that represents both our visitors and our employees. But irrespective, the point is simply, don't put a lot of money on. Well, there are many things wrong with that project. One is I don't think you can get a permit in the near term because of some threatened and endangered species issues. But secondly, it's just a small sea of asphalt that probably won't be terribly productive. And shouldn't we put our money and time in something more permanent and with a more cohesive solution that looks at the whole traffic flow in the 4248 corridor, which is very multifaceted? You know, there's a lot going on there, and it's going to take some sophisticated work to resolve it.
What's the endangered species? I guess I haven't heard that.
Oh, there's an orchid. It's called a Ute Lady's Truss is the common name of it, and it just happens to occur in that area. And about 2 or 3 years ago, it was the first time that it was found in Summit County. So it becomes a new and present problem because where it does occur is in wetlands. And so that makes it a hurdle to clear any wetland permit. And it's a very difficult plant to find. It takes 3 years to do an adequate survey for it.
Okay. Let's see. Also discussed on Tuesday was Park City's Light Deed Program. This offers homeowners a cash payment in exchange for placing a deed restriction on their property that basically wouldn't allow nightly rentals. Is that something that Summit County is interested in doing as well?
I'm sure we heard that, and we're in the process, obviously, of reviewing our affordable housing policy. I don't see why we wouldn't consider it. I doubt that it's going to be a major change, but with this problem, as well as, we need to do whatever we can, frankly. It's bottom line.
All right. I'm just curious, have you been to any of those Olympic Listening Project meetings that have been held so far?
I have not. I don't think I'm going to be of worse about how the Olympics come together. So I haven't bothered to listen.
Yeah. And I guess I was just going to say, since you would be out of office, I mean, what do you think? I mean, should we host another games in Utah?
Oh, you know, as a casual opinion, I think we accomplished our goal when we hosted the games back in 2002. And to do it again, we need to be very, very careful of what we're doing. I know that the community thinks that it's a, and it is a wonderful event and a great party, but it has an enormous effects on our economy that are both good and bad. We got the good ones from 2002. When we do it again, we're going to see the bad ones. And the bad ones are that small businesses just get kicked in the teeth during the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, they...
I was going to ask, I mean, what if, in fact, that we do go after the 2030, 2034 games, I mean, what is it that we need to make sure happens if in case they do come back?
Well, the you know, realistic understanding of what happens to the money is important. It is normal, common, and it happened in the 2002 games that the ski resorts who participate in putting on the events get paid for their lack of revenue, because it's no mystery. Your skier visits drop off a full quarter during the year of the Olympics. That is enough to make every ski area, any ski area, lose millions of dollars. And so typically the ski areas get compensated. The problem is that the small businesses don't, of course.
Yeah. Let's get to Wednesday's meeting. You received the third quarter financial update. Everything looking good there?
Looking very good. Revenues were extremely strong. We're substantially better off than where we were projected to be. And so in that regard, we're very happy. We're looking for a surplus at the end of the year that we, you know, hopefully can use for some capital projects if it turns out.
All right. Would you have to run through then a truth and taxation hearing then to do that?
No, because that's not raising taxes. Mm-hmm. That's just deciding what we're going to do with the surplus that we received.
All right. And you would hear from everybody whose property taxes were increased about how about lowering taxes then?
Oh, this is not a discussion about property taxes. What we heard last night were about general sales tax revenues.
Okay.
Sales tax revenues are extremely good. The real estate market, in terms of what we're seeing in terms of transfer tax, building permits, et cetera, is kind of a mixed signal. We're seeing some softening in all of that, which had to be over the rush that we just recently went through, the real estate boom.
Yeah. Both Basin Recreation and North Summit Fire Special Service Districts are contemplating tax increases for next year. Is the council on board with those, given all of the complaints we've heard so far about the property tax increases?
Well, I think council is always willing to listen to our departments in terms of what they have proposed. We're obviously very supportive generally of recreation and basin recreation as well. But we did not give anybody a nod last night. All we saw were some preliminary concepts or thoughts about what they were doing.
All right. Let's see. You also heard about the Summit County Community Planning Lab. Is that something that the council is willing to approve?
Well, I certainly think so. It's an exciting idea and a fresh idea to help involve the community more in land planning activities, and for that reason, I think we were excited to hear about it.
Okay, is this something that the council would have to fund, or can it be done within existing budgets?
Oh, there were some. I think we were talking about some minor funding. They were talking about perhaps as much as $10,000 a year, which really Pat kind of characterized it as, gas for the bus, and so that we could do field trips and that sort of stuff. So not a huge funding activity, but a lot of involvement for the public and staff in a comprehensive planning process.
All right. And then got an update on Summit County Fair. How did it do this year?
Exceeded everybody's expectations, even beyond our wildest dreams. It was we had standing room crowd only for much of the not only the rodeo events but the horsemanship events, etc. And just every aspect of the fair was firing on all cylinders, and staff has just done an excellent job, and the public is pleased, and we're very, very happy.
Okay, finally, I wanted to ask you a public hearing and also possible action scheduled on the Ecker Hill Middle School special exception for height. Did that get approved?
It did not get approved. I believe that this was, we only got the staff report, frankly, emailed to us moments before we saw the presentation. What we did do for them, was give them very explicit instructions about what they have to, the case they have to make in order to be allowed to build additional height.
Okay, so this comes back?
Yes, it definitely. Hang on one second, Leslie. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Stupid phones. Yes, it will come back, and hopefully they will make a detailed and supportable case on why they would qualify for a special exception.
Okay. But again, I mean, this is a project that we thought that would be well underway. Are you okay with, just the ramifications of that by pushing everything back probably another year?
First of all, when we talked to them about timing specifically, they were saying, well, gee, I've got some asphalt that I've got to get in order to make the project roll at the appropriate rate. And, the asphalt that they need to go in is not going to go in on top of the building. So, they can get the asphalt in anytime they want to. Beyond that, it appears as though they're fine under the normal course of construction, other than there seems to be this perpetual habit of the school districts coming to us after the fact for permits and approvals.
Okay. Doug, anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's it, Leslie. Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate your time, too. Thank you. That's Summit County Council member Doug Clyde. Heber City Council's special meeting on Tuesday turned into a two-hour dispute over a future public hearing and the mayor's authority. KPCW's Ben Lasseter reports.
Heber City Councilmember Ryan Stack said he called the special meeting Tuesday because he was frustrated at some outcomes of last week's airport planning open house. He and other council members said Mayor Heidi Franco had undermined the city's planning process by misleading the public last week about upgrading Heber's airport. Franco disputed that, saying her actions were designed to encourage resident involvement. Several tense exchanges Tuesday reflected philosophical differences that have surfaced since Franco took office in January. Stack said last week, Franco argued with engineers and cut them off as they explained various options for airport safety upgrades. Some residents oppose changes that could bring more traffic, but Stack and other officials say that without making safety improvements, the city could be held liable for not complying with federal standards. At Tuesday's meeting, Stack proposed having city staff and consultants run future airport meetings.
I have long said that if we're going to ask for public input, we have to make sure that we present real, accurate information in order to generate the input that we are soliciting. It doesn't do anybody any favors to ask for input on something that is not viable or unrealistic, or that will put the city in legal jeopardy.
Franco denied silencing anyone and said Stack's proposal was an attempt to take her mayoral powers away. She also denied Stack's request to change who runs those meetings, calling it out of order. When City Attorney Mark Smedley said Stack's order should be allowed to continue, Franco refused to allow it without seeing city code in writing to substantiate that. Stack said another reason he scheduled the special meeting was to address Franco's impromptu call for a public hearing on the airport. During the open house, Franco said that the council would vote October 18th on whether to approve the airport consultant's general plan. She also announced a public hearing would happen before the vote. Stack and Councilmember Mike Johnston said the way Franco described the public hearing was misleading. They said she implied that the council would consider resident input on whether to approve the master plan that day, when in fact the council would just be voting on a preliminary step. Franco argued she was just scheduling a meeting to give people a chance to speak, as promised in the project's early phases.
I want to earn the public's trust every day. That's who elected me. That's who I'm really accountable to. And that's my goal. The point is why are we nitpicking at each other when the goal is that we need to keep our promises and have the second meeting on the alternatives?
Ultimately, the council voted to hold a special public hearing October 17th rather than include it in a regular meeting to allow more time to focus on the issue. Johnston said the format should allow both the public and the council to speak uninterrupted. The council also decided to wait until next week's city council meeting to decide who would run future airport meetings, giving staff time to study city and state code. For a link to view the whole discussion, visit the web version of this report on kpcw.org. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Well, Rovember is a get-out-the-vote effort. It's happening on Sunday here in Park City, and on the phone with details is the Vice President of Outreach for Planned Parenthood of Utah, Annabelle Scheinberg. Good morning, Annabelle. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be here.
Yeah, so when and where is this happening?
On Sunday from 3 to 5, we're going to be using the space right below Jago Gallery at O.P. Rockwell for a postcard writing party. And to hear from some folks about why this election year is super important.
So you are writing postcards to whom?
Great question. The Planned Parenthood Action Council, which is our C4 advocacy arm, has organized this event and several other parties like it to reach 15,000 voters who are 18 to 40 years old, who are women along the Wasatch Front, including Summit and Wasatch County, to let them know that it's essential to get out and vote and support candidates who support families, pro-family policies, including child care, paid family leave, pay equity, and all the things that support families. And, you know, on the front of the postcard, we had a local Utah artist design it, and it's got some really great stamps with pictures of women, and one of them is a uterus, and it just says vote. Because this year, you know, our rights are on the ballot.
Right. And that's kind of how this Rovember has come about, as just in terms of the Roe v. Wade decision that was overturned by the Supreme Court?
Yes, this is a seismic shift in healthcare, Leslie. It's the first time that the Supreme Court has taken away a right that it's granted in our country's history. And it's important that people send a message of how they feel on November 8th this year.
Yeah. So is it a fundraiser or is it more of a just kind of a work party?
Our biggest goal is to get the postcards written, and we'll be bringing up a 600 that are already addressed. So people just need to customize them with a sentence, a signature, and if they want, they can add a little message about voting. And so we're going to be getting some things done. We're going to be hearing from some people who are running for office and enjoying company and getting excited to get our friends and neighbors out to vote for people who support reproductive freedom this year.
Yeah, and it seems like that's where it's kind of come down now. We talk about reproductive freedom, reproductive rights, as opposed to that, what we used to talk about, pro-choice versus pro-life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can explain that, Leslie. What we found is, first off, I think most people would identify themselves as pro-life in some way. But more important, so it's not a great dichotomy on the language. More importantly, decisions are something that we make and we think about. Choice may be more temporal. Like, I think I'd like this in my coffee this morning. We know this is a decision that people think hard about, and for some people it's a difficult decision. And we want to honor that with better language. Also, reproductive freedom takes into account, the whole movement for reproductive freedom takes into account more issues such as a person's economic status and how all of these things in a person's life come together, right? For example, their access to health care, their experience of discrimination in, say, housing or school, or things that may have contributed to where they are economically, that we make these decisions for each of us in a larger context, right? And so when we advocate for reproductive freedom, it gives us a chance to think about this idea of intersectionality or overlapping issues and oppressions that people are dealing with in their life. And people are making this decision for many, many reasons. And some of it has to do with the opportunities that are afforded to them.
Yeah. Are you aware of any Utah Republican candidates who do support Planned Parenthood's platform of reproductive rights?
I think that's a good question. I think when we go to pro-family, there are more so. But I think it's a very hard thing for a Republican to speak openly about. So those are more quiet conversations at this point.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about just what is the latest. Again, Utah had a trigger law that went into effect after the Supreme Court decision. Planned Parenthood, among others, filed for an injunction, of which was granted. Where do things stand now?
Yeah, great question. So we were ready for the worst news on June 24th, and we had been working with our attorneys for months so that we could be the plaintiff in a case challenging the cruel trigger ban on the basis that the Utah Constitution affords people more protection in this area than the U.S. Constitution. And so we really dove into that document. Our attorneys have been working on it for probably 6 months with us prior and thought about what are the claims, what are the constitutional claims we could make to protect or to advocate for this right. We really talked a lot about pregnancy and the health condition. We talked about due process. We talked about privacy. We talked about many things that we feel people are entitled to by the Constitution or given the right to, and yet are that is not honored with this trigger ban. So where it stands now is we've been in third district court twice, once 3 days after, so the Monday after Roe fell. And then we got a temporary restraining order. And so we were in the third district court with Judge Andrew Stone. Then he said, come back in 2 weeks. So on July 11th, we were back in court to argue for a preliminary injunction. That would basically hold off the trigger ban bill until this case could be heard and really argue before the third district court, our side and the state side. I mean, we believe this is a conversation that needs to be had. There's significant difference in our approach. And so he granted us the preliminary injunction, which means abortion is legal in Utah. Subsequently, an additional lawsuit that we were involved in with the state of Utah changed. And so at this point, abortion is legal in Utah up to 18 weeks. And that is where it stands now. We have a court date in September, and we are working with locally the ACLU of Utah as our part of our appellate counsel, as well as the firm of Zimmerman and Boer. So we feel very well represented between Planned Parenthood Federation of America's litigation and law team, Zimmerman and Boer, and the ACLU of Utah.
Okay, so did I hear you say that there's a hearing in September? Is that like today or tomorrow?
Next year. That'll be September 2023, to be clear. I'm sorry, I didn't say the year.
Okay.
So we believe that as things are scheduled, we should have our preliminary injunction in place until then, and possibly through the court process, because we anticipate there'll be an appeal after the decision.
Right. And again, I'm not an attorney. I don't really understand the intricacy of this. But my understanding is that the argument is that the trigger law is unconstitutional based on what is in Utah's state constitution. That can only be changed by a vote of all Utahns. Should we expect to see something happen in this upcoming legislative session that would get that on the ballot?
Funny you should ask, Leslie. We do have Senator Dan McKay, who is the sponsor of the trigger ban bill, SB 174, which was in the 2020 legislative session. He does have an open bill file that is blocked, so we can't see what's inside it, that has to do with a constitutional amendment around abortion. So that could mean that it could be on the 2024 ballot. And we don't know that that bill will go. We don't know what will be in it. We know it will be anti-abortion. And we'll have to wait until the session, which, as people know, starts in January, just after MLK Day, and goes through early March.
Yeah. Any response from Planned Parenthood with regard to the letters that were sent out by Representative Kara Berkland and Representative Lisenby, basically sending what some saw as threatening letters to Planned Parenthood, as well as other abortion care providers, telling them that they could be liable for performing abortions as we await the court hearing?
So we did respond in the media, Leslie, to those very cruel and threatening letters. Those letters we considered more of a stunt, honestly, for publicity, because we are following the law. And as I stated, we have a preliminary injunction. And throughout the history of the legal system, that protects us from the implications of this law. So we are acting fully in line with how law has been practiced for a long time. And the arguments put forward in the cease and desist letter were fairly radical in terms of how anyone would be treated in the situation we're in. So, yes, they were sent to Planned Parenthood, to the Utah Abortion Fund, to the Wasatch Women's Clinic, which is another private provider, and to national groups involved in abortion care. We did respond, and you know, there were some wonderful opinion pieces by a law professor and an individual stating just how really concerning the behavior was by the legislators to write something on letterhead that looked official, even though it wasn't. The next day after the letters were sent, the legislators issued a statement saying that those were not the opinion of the Office of Legislative Research and General Counsel. They kind of walked back a little bit.
And I guess just kind of given the reality of what's happening across the country, I don't, you know, women, I mean, are they being just a little bit more conscious of their perhaps reproductive rights being taken away from them? As a result, are we seeing a reduction in the number of abortions that need to be performed?
I think it's too early to tell, Leslie, and it would, and also the cause, I'm not sure on reduction in numbers. I do know that people are, it's a mix, I think, of people who aren't able to travel out of state in states like Texas, or Idaho or Arizona, where their rights have been restricted so severely that they, you know, there's very little abortion available in their state. So that could be a reason why abortion numbers are declining, if that is the case. I know there's a lot of disinformation and misinformation. For example, many people in Utah do not know that abortion is legal up to 18 weeks. I'm constantly hearing that when I go out to talk to people in the community. And so there's sort of so many reasons that it would be hard to put a finger on it at this point. You know, the overall abortion rate has been declining for 20 years as people have more access to affordable health care and contraception, some people, right? So we have seen a decline.
Okay. Once again, you'll be at the Jago Gallery there in the OP Rockwell building on Sunday, 3 to 5 p.m. Do people just show up? Do they need to register?
There is an RSVP link for the party, and that would help us plan. And I would recommend that they email engagement@ppau.org if you want to put that on your website. I can also send you an RSVP link for your website to upload in the next sort of little bit here.
Okay.
When I get to my desk, I'll send that in. But engagement@ppau.org will definitely help us plan for Sunday. Really looking forward to seeing Park City out and getting a lot of these postcards to voters.
Okay. Thanks so much for your time, Annabelle.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a great day.
Annabelle Scheinberg is the Vice President of Outreach for Planned Parenthood of Utah. The monthly Park City Gallery Stroll happening tomorrow night. And in the studio with details, I have Jeff Fishman and June Greeny with the Park City Professional Artists Association. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Jude, do you want to start and just kind of tell us when and how the stroll works?
Yeah, the Park City Gallery Association stroll happens every month, the last Friday of every month. So this month was a little confusing since we had five Fridays. It's happening tomorrow, the last Friday, and it's free. There are about 15 galleries that participate on Main Street, and then Julie Nestor off Main Street also participates. And we're all open. We usually have something fun going on, and this month is no exception.
Yeah. So is this all of our galleries in town that participate, or is it just those that want to participate?
It is actually those who are members of the Park City Gallery Association, which is a specific group of us who are trying to promote these art strolls and inside and outside of Summit County to bring visitors to the town to enjoy arts and culture.
All right. Do many of the galleries and stay open later than they normally would? Or
yes, especially at this time of the year. We're not normally open till 9 p.m., but on Friday, we'll all be there from 6 to 9. We'll have live music at the gallery at Jago. So up in the Rockwell Room, it's actually our last stroll in that location. We are transitioning into a couple new spaces, and that's sort of all evolving. But in the meantime, this will be kind of our last big bash. And we have some new work by an artist, a mixed media artist called Tiffany Owenby. So we'll be featuring her work and also making deals on lots of other work. So if you've been hanging off trying to save up to buy some artwork, this would be the time, because we don't want to have to move everything.
Right, I can understand that. And Jeff, what can you tell us some of the highlights of the gallery you're at?
I'm also at Jago with Jude, and Elaine Coombs is one of my favorite artists. We just did a post and an email distribution on her, highlighting her work, kind of holding on to the last light of summer is what we mentioned. She just has beautiful work that really makes the colors pop, and one of my favorites for sure.
Yeah. So how is it that people decide who gets to be exhibited at their galleries? Is it just because you like the art and
the aesthetic of the curator. So, and often the curator and the owner of the gallery are the same person. And so, you know, the longer you've been in it, the more you have an idea of what will sell, and then it's real easy for someone who's been doing it as long as I have to know what they like. So when I'm looking at new artists, and artists are always looking for venues to sell their artwork. There's no shortage of talented artists. But to find one that speaks to me personally, that I think will sell and speak to other people, is sort of what I'm doing. I, in particular, am attracted to people who have really unique techniques. Not just painting with oils or acrylics in a traditional manner, but often collage or, you know, for instance, the artist that Jeff was just talking about.
She only uses a knife, right?
Palette knife creates this interesting texture. But I'm feeling a little guilty. We should probably mention what the other galleries are doing.
Yeah, you got that list?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Meyer Gallery has a great show up right now. It's their small show, and they do it once a year, and everything there is 18 by 18 inches or smaller. So if you've been looking at some larger works by their artists, this is an opportunity to collect some smaller work by them. And they're featuring also a still life artist, Leslie Duke, who does sort of contemporary still lifes, which seems almost like a, I've forgotten the word, you know, still life doesn't scream contemporary, but she's doing a different kind of still life where the subject matter is a lot more contemporary.
I can mention Gallery Mar has a local Utah artist, Ron Rusin, and then also Maura Allen, who is Arizona-based, and they're going to have a collaborative exhibition starting on the 30th, and the artist will actually be in attendance there, so you can go ahead and meet them there at the Gallery Mar.
And I should say about Ron Rusin, his work is really colorful, lots of wildlife. And Marin has showed both Maura Allen and Ron Rusin for several years, so I'm sure she has a great collector base. But Mara's work is kind of also contemporary Western. So she's doing sort of screen printing, and it's another genre I don't generally think of as contemporary, but she's got some really interesting treatments for her subject matter.
And then our current neighbor for the time being, Susan Schwartz, is having an exhibition on August Day featuring brightly colored abstract paintings and vases. And that's a really beautiful space just located literally next door to us.
Okay. So when you talk about getting artists, I mean, you talk about not having to move. I mean, how is it the art gets into these galleries? Is it the artist that pays, or it's the
artist
gallery?
Ships it to us. Mm. And generally, I don't know if it's a hard and fast rule for all galleries, but you know, there's some period of time that we agree to have it and represent it and sell it. And then if it doesn't sell, we pay to send it back to them. So there's some pressure to pick art that is going to move so that we don't have to pick up the shipping on the end. And it's part of the cost that an artist incurs, you know, besides their years and years and years of learning to be a talented artist and all the training that goes into that. There's some hard costs for artists as well. So when you're looking at a price tag of a piece of art, you have to kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah. So the majority of the galleries, again, are on Upper and Lower Main Street. And then we've got, what, three off-site? Julie Nestor, Kimball Art Center, and I think one other.
Oh, my gosh. We should mention the Kimball Art Center has the most incredible exhibition going on right now. I can't tell you the names of the artists because they didn't send it to us, but we had a meeting in there for the Gallery Association just the other day, and there's a room in the back that the wallpaper is made of
bugs.
Insects. And there are taxidermy animals at a feast that it's just a visual feast. And it's weird and wonderful. So
okay.
If anyone has a chance to go see that, I would recommend it.
All right. And I know you guys did bring some music, live music at one of the, I think, springtime galleries. But will it just be at Jago this time you're bringing that in? Or do we have it spread throughout the different galleries?
As far as I know, we are the only ones who are having live music this week or this month. Mm-hmm. The Gallery Association plans two music strolls annually. So in March and in September, six or seven galleries have live music. Tomorrow night, it'll just be us and with live music. I forgot to mention that Summit Gallery, down toward the bottom, is featuring original works of art by Richard Harrington and Timothy White. So it's called Fall Structures Showcase. So don't miss them. They're kind of down by the bottom of the street.
Okay. Once again, the monthly gallery stroll happening this Friday night. People can find more information. How?
Online at the Park City Gallery Association.com. So PCGA.com, I think, is what it is.
Okay. Anything else?
Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you.
All right. Thanks, Leslie.
All right. Jeff, thank you.